Once in a generation, the perfect set of circumstances brings together two giants in their fields for a podcast. Experts that are so passionate about their craft that their mere conversation is more educational than a year of college and more fun than a week at Disneyland.
So if you know of a podcast like that, please be sure to let us know because we would love to listen to one. This is not that podcast.
Definitely not that podcast.
This is Helvetic, a podcast. And I'm Joe Carter.
And I'm David McCookie.
And thanks for joining us this time.
Yeah, this first time. Thanks, Mom.
Hi, honey.
I'll bet you're wondering what Helvetic, a podcast is. Helvetic, a podcast, is a podcast about theology, hence Helvetic, like in the Second Helvetic Confession, which I can't actually state whether either one of us holds to that confession in its entirety, but, you know, from a historical perspective, we have some respect for it anyway. And then, so it comes from the Second Helvetic Confession, and it comes from the font Helvetica, hence Helvetic, a podcast. So, Joe, why don't you maybe try to describe what our goal is in this podcast and what the heck it is we're doing.
In this podcast, we're hoping to discuss the convergence of the Reformed faith and design and how those two interact.
Exactly. So we thought it would be a good idea. This episode, we're going to give you guys a little bit of background on us just from a design perspective, because I think we're probably going to discuss things about 50-50. You know, sometimes we'll be talking about theology, sometimes we'll be discussing design, and a lot of the time we'll be discussing, you know, the intersection of the two. But I thought it would be good if we gave a background on maybe how we got to be designers, where we came from, education, that kind of thing. So I'll start for myself. I guess I was never formally educated in design, although now I've taken some classes through Liberty University, but that just started a few months ago, really. Most of my learning came from blogs, the interwebs, Lynda tutorials, YouTube tutorials, lots of YouTube tutorials, and lots of blog posts, and not just blog posts on how to use the software, but, you know, stuff on the principles of design, Gestalt, and the rest of it. So for myself, I started doing this kind of thing a little bit out of high school, and I've been, I guess I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. Started out freelancing. Right now I am working as a front-end web developer, which means I do a lot of design work, and then at the same time a lot of CSS, HTML, web development work, front-end side of things, with Olive Tree Bible Software. So that's my story. Not a lot of education. Right now I'm pursuing a bachelor's in graphic design. Joe, how about you?
Well, I was interested in design from a young age. So I started drawing as a very young child.
Like, how young, Joe? How young are we talking? Like about, straight out of the womb?
Like 3 months, I think.
Wow.
3 months was my first.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay.
No, actually, my first big memory with drawing, I used to draw a lot when I was a kid. It's just something that I did for recreation. But one of my first big memories is I got a paying gig as a artist, $1 per drawing from my grandfather, probably when I was around, 8 years old or so. And I'm 44 right now, so that was a while ago.
A little bit.
But he said, if you get me 50 drawings, I'll send you $50. And he did that for me twice. And it was one of those things that was just, it was so fun to do. And it just forced me to do a bunch of drawings. And he wouldn't, they'd have to actually be quality, like something that I'd really tried and put some effort into. He wouldn't just, I couldn't just draw 50 smiley faces on sheets of paper and consider that was going to suffice. He really wanted to see my drawings. And it was pretty cool. We actually found those after he passed away. He had them saved away in a special place and had obviously looked at them a lot, and it was pretty neat. I started at a high school. I went to, this will come up in other discussions, I'm sure, in the future, but I went to Ricks College, which is a now BYU South Idaho, a Mormon college, and I studied graphic design there for a year, and then I also studied graphic design at the local. Well, actually, I studied art at the local community college. I never did graphic design there. And then I've done freelance design, both just purely on the side. I also had my own business for about 8 years doing freelance design and CAD drafting type work. So I have quite a bit of experience with that. I've done design at some level or another, drawings on a professional capacity for around 20 years. So I've, again, like I said, I had about 20 years experience doing professional drawing or design work, but it's never been something where I've been employed doing that. I've always either done it as my own business or freelance. And currently I do software testing for Olive Tree. So David and I work together.
So that's cool. The software testing thing is kind of an interesting twist at the end of that, because it seems like there's some level of do you find that at any point your experience with design, not necessarily in the technical aspects like drawing or whatever, but just in the thinking about users and people interacting or seeing the thing, do you find that plays a role in what you do in quality assurance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you have to, if you're going to do exploratory testing where you're actually a person working on a device rather than writing scripts and whatnot, you have to at some point have a sense of how should this work.
Sure.
And I think that is one of the areas where we're going to come into the intersection of our faith and design, is our design is trying to roll back some of the fall, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're fighting against the noetic effects and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so I would say that my experience with design has helped with testing, in that I go into an application and go, okay, well, here's how I expect it should happen. And if it doesn't happen the way that I expect it should happen, then were my expectations wrong, or has the developer done something wrong, or the UI designer done something that's awkward or uncomfortable for the customers, as well as just even at a deeper level, when you look at the code, there is a sense of, you know, I can look at code that we've done in-house, some of it older and more raw and rough, and some of the more recent code where people have been more structured and more kind of elegant in their implementation of the code. And you can see that as well. You can see that there's some differences there.
Sure. So why don't we go ahead and jump right into today's topic. And today's topic really relates to what I've done recently. And so what I've done recently is, I used to have a MacBook Pro, and Joe and I are both Apple guys, but don't worry, we do talk about other platforms. Actually, because of our jobs, we get to work with a lot of different platforms, and just try to understand, you know, things like Windows and Android and all that. More so Joe than myself, because I like to live in Johnny Ive's white world of wonder. WWW, so the internet.
Yes.
That didn't make sense.
What?
I should cut that. Anyway, so the topic for today is my transition and what I've been struggling is a bad word, but, you know, it's like a first world problem, but what I've been thinking about and trying to understand. So basically what I did was, I sold my MacBook and I bought a used Mac Pro on eBay. Just one of the older models that I was able to get a really good deal on. And obviously with that comes a lack of mobility. Like, there's a reason we're using Joe's laptop to record this podcast right now and not mine, because there's hardware that I could buy for my iPad, which I'll get into in a second, to do podcast recording, but I don't have a mobile computer in the sense that most people think of when they think of computer. Go ahead.
And if any of you are thinking you would judge him over this, just realize you don't know his pain. All right. You don't know what he goes through.
Yeah. I mean, really. So then at the same time, I turned around and I bought an iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil. So now my mobile computing solution is all iOS. Like, I don't have a laptop per se. And so I've been thinking about writing a blog post about this, and I want to title the blog post a computer by any other name, because when people think of iOS devices, iPhones, iPads, we hesitate to call them a computer, right? Because computer means that, you know, that box that runs some sort of desktop operating system like Windows or OS X or Linux or whatever. And we I mean, from a technical perspective, we recognize that the thing in our car that, you know, the anti-lock brake system in our car is technically a computer. But we don't think of that as a computer because we can't, you know, you can't run Microsoft Word on it. And that's kind of... Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not a... I mean, when we think computer, we think personal computer. And actually, I wanted to just interject one thing here. Because since my history goes back, I first went to college in 1989, and we won't ask when other people on this broadcast were born, but it may be similar. I went to college, and I actually was in school for graphic design. So you think graphic design, you're thinking we need to have a robust computer. You need to have a good, a big hard drive to hold all those large files. You need to have... lots of RAM. So my hard drive on my computer, and my computer was an upgraded computer. I didn't buy it off the floor. I built it up a little bit. And my hard drive was 500 megabytes. And I had 16 megs of RAM. And
nice.
Yeah. I added later on, added 32 more megs of RAM because I like balance.
That's like 48.
It was 48 megs of RAM.
Almost.
And it made a whole huge difference in that computer. It was a real monster after I did that. but it's funny to think, so when McCookie is talking about these mobile devices, you know, my phone, I have an iPhone 5S, that was actually given to me by someone who had upgraded to a better phone and just kind of gave me their phone, which is really nice of them, by the way, because they certainly could have sold it for a fair chunk of change. But the one that they gave away that they didn't want anymore was a 5S with 64 gigs of RAM. So that has 128 times the storage that my Macintosh had when I went to school for graphic design. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, computers have obviously come a long way. But I guess the interesting thing to me is we tend to define a computer not by the hardware specifications, because my iPad Pro is technically faster than the MacBook that I sold in some ways.
That's definitely faster than the MacBook we're using right now.
Right. And I mean, Joe's MacBook is not exactly a slouch. But the interesting thing here is we don't define computer, like it doesn't need to be a certain speed before we call it a computer. It needs to perform certain tasks.
Yep.
And I've struggled with that definition. Again, struggled is a weird word, but like I've struggled to understand how we should be defining computer, because like if you don't write Microsoft Word documents, then for you, your phone might be your computer, because, you know, a computer technically is just something that processes numbers. Right. It's just ones and zeros. That's all that it does. And if the computer does everything that you need it to do, and all you need it to do is Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and, you know, notes, you know, grocery lists or whatever, if that's what you need out of a computer, then your iPhone is your computer technically.
Yeah, and it's in fact a far more capable computer than even a nice new desktop or laptop computer. A lot of times people will buy a lot more than they need just because, well, you know, I got to have a Core i7 processor, and then I'm going to go and do emails and read, watch videos and do light web browsing.
Right. Yeah. And then at the same time, you've also got this idea of like, well, you can't plug a mouse into the iPad, which I think was the hardest. I think that's one of the hardest things for people to get over is like, it's only a touchscreen interface. It'll never be anything more than a touchscreen interface. Like Apple is not planning to support mice with the iPad Pro. And so it's this, you know, there's a certain precision there that you're expecting from a computer, like when it comes to checking little tiny boxes in forms, that your finger makes it kind of hard to do. But then the question that kept coming up in my mind as I decided to make this transition was, well, do I really need to be able to do these specific set of things that you need a mouse to do, or these specific set of things that you need a desktop class operating system to do? Do I need to be able to do that anywhere but at my house? It's really interesting because people will fight on this. Like people start fights over, you know, their operating system of choice or whatever. And people will look down on you. If you're the kind of person who you don't really have a use for a computer, you like Facebook, you like Twitter, you like notes, you don't have a use for a PC or a Mac. And you just use your iPhone. There are people who will be like, oh, well, you're not a serious computer user. But you are. Like, it's not like you're just joking. I mean, you use it for grocery lists. And if you didn't have it for grocery lists, like, that would be a gap in productivity. And you use it for social networking. And if you didn't use it for social networking, you'd have a lot more productivity. That's a joke, kind of. But, you know what I mean. You wouldn't be able to connect with people in the ways that you connect with them through social networking or whatever. So you are using it. It is a legitimate thing that you are using. And it is a computer. And I wonder if, and Joe, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. I wonder if part of the reason for that is because a lot of people who use computers now, I mean, I can't count the number of hours I've spent learning to use Windows and then the number of hours that I spent learning to use OS X after that. And there's kind of a sense of pride, like, well, I've learned to use this tool. And, you know, because you're using this tool that is really easy, because if we're just being honest, like, I mean, my niece who's like 2 years old can use an iPhone, right? If a 2-year-old can use that, it can't be a serious computer. So I wonder if there isn't kind of a sense of pride there where it's like, you know, your computer isn't a real computer because you didn't have to spend all the time I spent learning it. Does that make any sense to you, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a huge part of the kind of the social gravitas that you bring to a situation when you take out, your MacBook and open it up and it's got the big glowing Apple on the back of it and, you know, you're serious about graphics or design. And in fact, what's really funny is when I bought this MacBook, one of the things I was looking at was PC solutions as well. Like, could I use a Windows computer and do the same thing? And really, yeah, I could. Yeah. I absolutely could have. And I probably, even from buying this used MacBook, I probably could have saved some money buying a Windows computer and had at least more powerful specs on it. One of the reasons that I didn't do that is just if you go into it kind of speaks tangentially to what David was talking about right here, is if you go into a design situation and you pull up an Asus computer or you pull open a Toshiba instead of opening up a Mac, there is a certain, you're taken a little less seriously as either as a designer because you're using what some designers would say is inferior hardware.
Sure, definitely.
And I could see, you know, David, I could see you running into that same situation where you go into a design situation and open up your iPad Pro, mm-hmm. and people could say the same thing like, well, that's nice, but we need to do serious design here.
Yeah, we need a professional. Right. This is an iPad Pro.
Well, and actually, it is one of the things that's kind of kept me back from at least mentally acceding to going the direction of going towards like an iPad Pro, is that I feel like there aren't great vector design apps on the iPad Pro.
Sure.
There's really good drawing apps if you're doing drawings that are going to end up being bitmaps of some sort, you know, PNGs or something like that, where you're, you know, pushing pixels around and you're painting more than doing like a tight edged graphic.
Absolutely.
But it seems like that there's still a gap there. Some of the best products in that realm are part of the Adobe Creative Suite. So you can get this free app on your iPad, but then that means you're paying $50 a month to have Creative Cloud to use that free app in any sort of an effective way.
And you're not even necessarily using the apps that you're really paying for, like Adobe, you know, the desktop class apps.
Right, yeah, you're using those as like the finishing products rather than as the full-blown design tools that they are, yeah. So that's been one of the limitations that I've seen in the iPad. And I'm excited, actually, I use Affinity Designer and Affinity Photo on my Mac. And I'm excited because they have officially announced that iPad apps are something that they are working on. They haven't given any sort of release release date, but they have said that that's what they're working on. And one of the reasons that their apps are so fast on computer, I mean, you look at these. If you do head-to-head comparisons with the Adobe Creative Suite, they're just significantly faster.
Yep.
They're significantly more lightweight on how much they tax the operating system. And it's because they actually were designed originally for iPad. The engine that they used was designed to be something that was going to run on an iPad.
Yeah, and they leverage things like Metal and APIs that iOS and OS 10 have for specifically graphics things. It's actually really interesting how easy it is to create an app like Affinity Photo. I mean, not that it's easy, like, you know, I could do it tomorrow or anything.
Well, you could create the basic thing. It's the details that will take you years.
Right, and the UI design and all that.
Right.
So for me, this is what I did, and I'd be interested, and we'll talk about how you guys can connect with us later if you're interested. But for me, what I did in preparation for all of this was I started writing out, okay, so I have a little office area. What sorts of things do I do at my computer at my office area? And I had actually found that I wasn't moving my Mac away from my office area very often at all. So I wrote out all the things that I use my computer for when it's at my office area. And that was a lot of things like 3D stuff, you know, using Blender or other 3D software, video editing, Photoshop work, that kind of thing. That's what I usually would use my computer for in the office. And then I wrote out, okay, well, what do I use my laptop for when I'm in my living room? You know, that kind of thing. Where I'm not looking to be as formal, I'm not necessarily going to be sitting down long. And what I found was there weren't a lot of cases of things. Like, sometimes I would do some of that stuff in the living room, but I have a more color accurate monitor at my desk, and so it was always worthwhile for me to, you know, go into the office and work with that. So I didn't end up writing down much there. And then I wrote out, okay, well, what are the things I use my iPad for? And that list was just super long. And then what are the things that I use my iPhone for? And that list was also super long. And there was a lot of crossover there. But what I guess what I found was, oh, and then I had another list of things that I take my MacBook to do, take my laptop out of the house to do things with, because those are two very separate considerations. So, for example, this podcasting thing would be something that would fall on that list. But, you know, who doesn't have a laptop? You know, if both Joe and I switched, this podcast wouldn't exist necessarily. But Or we'd have to record it from home or whatever. So what I found was, here are the things that I actually use a computer for, which I think is something that people don't really think about. A lot of people will not buy a computer. Like, a lot of people would not consider buying an iPad because it's like, well, you can't do serious word processing on it because, you know, the touchscreen makes it a little bit inconvenient. But then you ask that person, like, well, when's the last time you authored a Word doc? Well, you know, sometimes I open, well, you can open them. Like, there are things that we expect a computer to do, and we wouldn't be willing to switch over to use all iOS or whatever, or all Android. We wouldn't be willing to do that because, well, it wouldn't be a serious computer. But do you actually do those things? And so what I found was that when I did use a desktop, it was for stuff that I had to use a desktop for, and that, you know, a Mac Pro is just going to beat the living daylights out of a MacBook Pro in terms of performance. And it really has. My Mac Pro is 3 times faster than my laptop ever was at anything. And more, you know, faster than my MacBook Pro in a lot of other cases. So I would love to see, like, if you guys wanted to, on the Helvetic Facebook group, for example, if you guys wanted to post, like, here's how I use my computer and here's how I use my, maybe if you have a tablet or whatever, and maybe Joe, you could do this too. And I can share mine. Because I wonder, I think the shape of how people are using their computers is drastically changing. And people who never would have owned a computer before now do because they use Facebook or they use Twitter, and that's all that they use it for. But they still have this expectation that, well, if I'm going to buy a computer, it should probably be Windows. I should probably go to Best Buy and spend $300 or, you know, on a laptop, when it would be so much better just buying an iPhone and sticking with the iPhone, or maybe an iPad with a keyboard. Or does that make sense to you, Joe?
Yeah, definitely. But it made me think of that quote out of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Have you ever read that? Hitchhiker's
Guide
to the Galaxy? Yeah, I love that book.
Never saw the movie.
The book is actually better.
Go figure.
But in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there's a point here where, you know, the Earth's been destroyed and they're out in space, and they're realizing that humans weren't the smartest creatures on the Earth. And in fact, were the third smartest creature on the Earth. And they thought they were the first. The dolphins actually thought that they were the smartest creatures on Earth, and humans thought they were the smartest creatures because they were able to, have cars and drive around and make guns and bombs and airplanes and go to work and do digital watches, which they still thought were a pretty neat idea. And all that dolphins did is just frolic in the ocean and play. And turns out that the dolphin's argument for being the smartest creature on Earth was the exact same argument. So there's a sense sometimes where people go, you know, they mock. You'll see. I mean, I looked at forums literally a day or two ago. I was reading an article about some particular thing with the iPad Pro versus the Microsoft Surface, and people are saying, well, that's not a real OS, and this is a real OS, and, you know, the fanboys from the different groups were kind of battling one another and trading insults back and forth. But I think discussing whether or not something's a real OS is sort of besides the point. And I think, actually, David, that you touched on a really good aspect of it is, what are you really doing with it? How are you really using it? If you can narrow down how you're really using it and see if this tool will work for how you're using it, then it might be the right tool for you. And it might be that you need a full-blown desktop OS device to get the job done, to get the things that you need to do done.
And I think for a lot of our listeners, that may very well be the case. And it's the case for me. I just found that what I don't need is to be able to bring that particular kind of device with me everywhere. You know, that sitting in my office at home is more than sufficient.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I mean, I take my laptop with me. It's almost like a security blanket. It's a little pathetic. I take it with me pretty much everywhere I go.
And then never take it out.
And then rarely take it out, except at home. I use it at home on my desk all the time. But it is something where I think the other day I came into the office and I didn't have my laptop. I just had an iPad and a Bible and a couple other things with me in a smaller bag. And it's not a purse. It's just a small, very, very manly bag.
It has a beard. The bag has a beard. It's fine.
Yeah. It's drinking a stout every time I set it down. No. But I was kind of, I feel like, oh no, I don't have my real computer with me. And had that kind of that epiphany of, and I don't need it. There's literally no reason I would possibly need to have the computer with me. For anything that would possibly come up, I could use the iPad. So it's kind of funny to think, like, I've only got this iPad with me, you know, 64 gigs and 2 gigs of RAM and significantly higher resolution display than I ever had on my desktop computer when I was in graphic design school.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are other things that we could bring up here. I know I had in the notes to talk about the Surface, and I was thinking we might address the idea of a file system, but I think we could probably leave that for another show. This has probably gone long enough. We would just encourage you guys, if you want to give us some feedback, maybe you're sitting at home listening to this from your Surface tablet plugged into a monitor. Maybe you're sitting at home just fuming at us. You can actually call and leave us a voicemail. The phone number for that is 707-99-TULIP, 707-99-TULIP. So you can go ahead, give us a call, leave us a voicemail. We won't answer, so you don't have to worry about interacting with an actual person, which I know gives me a lot of anxiety. But you can leave us a voicemail, talk about this, ask us a question, whatever you want. You can also tweet us.
Sure. If we had a Twitter handle, that would be great.
We do have a Twitter handle.
Oh.
I will set it up. And you can go, you can search Facebook for Helvetic. We have a reformed design group, kind of like the reformed pub, but a lot smaller. But if you want to join that, if you want to comment, maybe you can also post your list of how you use your various devices. And all of this ties into design. If you're wondering, all of this ties into design, because what I'm trying to do, and the reason I made this transition, is to design my workflows, to think about my tools and to design. It's not designing my life per se, but it's designing how I interact with my devices and how I think about these things. And of course, all of this plays into, you know, if you're a designer, you probably use some of these tools. So yeah, we're curious how you guys use these things. Go ahead, call us, leave us a voicemail, post on our Facebook, tweet at our
Twitter handle that we'll insert here once we have one.
Soon to exist account.
Yes, it's going to be amazing.
Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful whatever time of day it is for you where you are.
And have a great tomorrow.